Good afternoon, everyone. We've got an article from the Gospel Coalition page. I saw it because I thought about its title and wanted to dig into it. Hug the Parade, Ministry Challenges, open parentheses, and opportunities, close parentheses, in transient places. And Steve, you've been here for 30 years. Is Fayetteville a transient place?
Slightly.
Yeah.
That's an understatement.
It's an understatement, yeah. Planning a church is hard work in any context. Planning in transient places, though, can make it feel like permanence and sustainability are nothing more than the stuff of myths and legends. Most large cities naturally lend themselves to pulsing beat of people coming and going, whether due to a high concentration of university students, military personnel, government workers, or financial power. I think that our author, Bill Riddle, is that how I pronounce that? Riddle?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Would be able to relate to Fayetteville quite well, with Fort Bragg being present, largest military installation population in the United States. We experience a tremendous turnover in this church. Brian?
My home, Washington, D.C., is a tale of two cities. Long-term residents combined with the ongoing swirl of people coursing in and out. To ignore one or the other is to miss out on the reality of the place. The challenges of planting and pastoring in such a transient place can be brutal. In the first several years of our church plant, we saw an average turnover of about 45% every year. I was not prepared for almost half of our church to change from year to year. In the first several years of our church plant, we saw an average turnover, just a highlight, sorry. On a personal side, constantly saying goodbye is emotionally taxing. Friendships are hard to develop since they take time. I found this to be especially true for my family. Over time, it can become just as hard to engage with new people out of a sense of weariness and even self-protection. There are real challenges on the practical and organizational side of church planting as well. It's tough to think through intentional discipleship plans, let alone identify, train, and appoint leaders in a church when anyone could pick up and leave at any time. Maintaining a sense of DNA for a church plant can be overwhelming with such a high ebb and flow of personnel. Even those coming in often bring with them the good and bad from previous churches. Budgeting can feel impossible. Church plants in transient places face massive financial pressure and instability, along with a cultural mindset bent toward assuming everything must happen fast. But it's not all bad. As another local pastor put it, doing ministry in a transient city is like hugging a parade. While the challenges are real, so are the opportunities. Big opportunities. Certain aspects of ministry in a transient city energize me. We have to keep a sharp missional edge and outward focus. Early on in our church, we had to grow at a rate of 50% just to maintain our numbers. I'm invigorated by a constant influx of people who are desperate for community. The transience means that we don't have the comfort of routine, but it also means ministry is never boring. We're constantly working to develop leaders and reach more people who need Jesus. We have to embrace the reality that we're a sending church who has equipped people and sent them out to cities all over the world. We have learned many things along the way about thriving as a church plant in a transient city. Here are six. Number one. Seize every opportunity. You don't have time to waste. This is true for people both inside and outside the church. So get after it. Transient settings breed an urgency in people that can translate into great opportunity for the gospel to take root in their lives.
All right, let's stop on each one. So this is true for people both inside and outside the church. So I want to talk to everyone that's in the military, having done it for a little while myself. I remember when we got picked up to the Sergeant Major's Academy and knew that we were only going to be 10 months in El Paso. That's it. We're just going to be someplace for 10 months. John, when you only have 10 months to be someplace, you don't have 6 weeks to be looking for a church to attend. You're wasting a giant portion of your time. So you got to get somewhere, plug into a church, and start serving right away. And yet we have military couples that'll spend 3, 4, 5, 6 months looking for the right church. There are no perfect churches out there. They don't exist. You're not going to find a church like the last one you're in. So plug in. That's what he's saying right there. You got to get busy. Your experience the same way,
Jack? Yeah, yeah, it is. We going. Mine was more with TDYs and stuff, but you kind of knew. Okay, I'm gonna be over here for 2 or 3 months for school, so I know what church I'm going to before I get there.
Yep.
And when I get there, it better be the church it's advertised, or I got to make a quick adjustment very, very fast. I was very fortunate knowing that I had a short time I could stick with the church even if it wasn't quite there, because I needed the fellowship of believers. And more than anything, that's what I was looking for, was the ability to be around them, because, let's face it, everybody's moving around so much so fast. But in Baumholder, I was there 6 years, and we turned over 2/3 of our church annually.
Sure.
You know, in 2 years, you had a whole brand new church, and you formed relationships very, very fast. Or you felt like you were an outsider.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder to what degree, though, is the opportunity being missed by individuals because they don't know what they're looking for in a church.
Sure.
Because the fact of the matter is, if I know what I'm looking for, I mean, we don't necessarily do that with other things. I mean, sure, there might be the exception, but not many people spend, you know, that much time picking out a car or buying a house. Once they know what it is they're looking for, they want things to progress quickly. And I don't think that individuals that are moving or looking for a church know what it is they should be looking for.
Or is it the priority, Brian? I find
that's true.
Got to find the right school. We got to find the right house. You know, that the right house, John. The right. I mean, this is the. I mean, we need to find the right. You're going to be here for 3 years,
mm-hmm.
right? Yeah, why is the house more important than the church? And then they're frustrated because they live 40 minutes away. But man, they're living in that neighborhood that they always wanted to live in, and they're not connected to a church. And it was not that way for us. Each time that we moved, we had a real good idea of what church we were going to start with. We weren't deciding on the Sunday that we showed up. We'd already decided, this is the first church we're going to try, this is the second church. The transient settings breed an urgency in people that can translate into great opportunity for the gospel to take root in their lives. If the people allow the gospel to take root in their lives.
Yeah.
Number two.
Stay through hardship. It took 5 years of living and working here for our neighbors to start believing we weren't just a flash in the pan. What sealed it was when we had our house broken into twice in the span of 10 days. Neighbors couldn't believe we stayed, and they rallied around us to help our family through it. Longevity will give a church planter hard-won credibility with long-term residents and neighbors. While I don't recommend getting robbed as a ministry strategy, we praise God for opportunities to go show Christ's love by staying through hardship. Longevity will give a church planter hard-won credibility with long-term residents and neighbors. I can't help thinking about that one. We had a family a couple years ago, it's hard to remember how long it's been now, that they were a part of our church when they thought they were going to be here for about a year. And then once they found out that they were going to be here longer after they had been here and, you know, participated in ministry, served in certain areas, but definitely were one of those squeaky wheel type people, that after they found out they were going to stay longer, then they left our church. I was like, we're good enough for a year, 18 months, but when it finds out it's going to be 3 years, we're no longer good enough. Makes me question why you were here for the first 18 months.
Stay through hardship. You have definitely stayed, Steve.
Well, that's good advice, whether you're a church planner or not.
Yeah.
Yeah, it goes for just about anything you do, any job you have, any marriage, any relationship.
Yeah, but I think it has to be said to the millennial group. The younger groups today that are going to be coming up with their families and raising them. I think it has to be said, because what are they putting out now? The average person will have 7 jobs by the time they're 35.
Wow.
And the average employee has been at their position less than 5 years. I mean, put it in the Christian school realm. The average head of school turns over every 4 years.
How do you make an impact?
You don't.
You just get by. You're just kind of like managing. You're just that's what it is.
It's the cultures of the schools are so hardcore that the guys coming in aren't going to be able to make an impact, and they decide, well, you know, I'm gone. Or they get hired to do a job, like get accredited, and they get it done in 2 or 3 years, and then they go to the next school that needs to be accredited. And they begin making those kind of shifts.
Longevity will give a church planter hard-won credibility with long-term residents and neighbors. I don't know to what degree we're concerned about having credibility. I don't know to what degree we're concerned about making an impact. What do you think, John? Do you think people are concerned about that?
Do you mean people in the pews or the people in the staff?
Pews.
I don't think they think about that.
I don't know. I think some do, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, I would say very much more as this is what we've always done, and this is...
Or their walk with God is personal, not so much corporate or, you know, your responsibility.
Well, I just think, like, in a transient city like ours, the people that are coming in really, they know I'm only going to be here 3 years. So they don't really, you know, I know it sounds terrible, but they don't really care what's going to happen in 10 years because they're not going to be here.
Yeah.
You know, all they care about is, you know, what are you going to do for my kid next month, next year, you know, in 2 years, and then I'm gone and I don't really care after that.
But they're not thinking that this is Fort Bragg and they'll end up coming back at some point.
Well, no, it's the idea of those that are Fayetteville residents.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so, you know, you got a guy come. We have so many things that come and go in our town. So if I'm a long-term Fayetteville resident and I see things come and go, this business was here, now it's gone. This was here, now it's gone. Oh, the military brought in this thing, but now it's gone. Mm-hmm. People came in, they're gone. And their leadership mindset's the same way. 18 months, we change company commanders. I can wait this guy out. 3 years with this first sergeant, that's okay. I'll have another one in 3 years. We can wait this guy out. You know, but they see that so often that if you're talking about a church plant, is this going to, like you said, a flash in the pan? Is this going to be another one of those here today, gone tomorrow type of things? While we stay, we understand that 43% of the people are going to leave. But I'm a part of the 57%. And can I really put my trust in it? And this guy, he came in, and he's saying, hey, 57%er, stay with me. We're going to make it through this. And I'm thinking, man, you haven't been in this community but 2 years.
Right.
Are you really going to stick through it?
Right.
And so there's some hardships there that he's saying the church planter is going to have to mentally tough through and actually really and truthfully get to the mindset of thinking like a long-term person, acting like a long-term person, proving to the long-term person that I'm not here for the now and gone tomorrow when something bigger, better comes along.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking about when I came in 2006 and obviously, I was the junior pastor, Baptist pastor in the city, but except for Brooks Grimes, I'm really having a hard time, Steve, of thinking about any Baptist church anywhere in the surrounding area that has a pastor that's been here longer than I have. And this is only my 13th year. This summer will be 13 years. That's not a long time. So that's, I mean, not only are we dealing with the turnover of the congregation, we're dealing with the turnover of the leaders as well. And I just don't know how much of an impact you really make with that level of turnover.
Well, to what degree, though, does that get affected by the entities that those churches are associated with? Because I'm just thinking of, you know, some of our Southern Baptist church friends that they rotate pastors, some pastoral staff rather frequently.
Who rotates? Who's the they you just referred to?
Well, as far as like some of the associate, the Southern Baptists that I'm familiar with, that they actually, those in the SBC, that the staff that are on those churches actually will rotate through for a couple different. I'm familiar with a couple garb churches as well, that it's, you know, as soon as one pastor's done, they move on and someone else is kind of sent to them.
There's no sending with the SBC. There's no entity that's sending anything. It's the church calling the pastor. Bill Sturm wasn't sent by anyone. The church sought him out when they needed a pastor.
Right, and that, like the pastor at Village, I mean, he retired, but you know, he'd been there for
20
at least a long, long time.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no entity sending.
So I mean, he'd been a long time, but again, he retired, and then the church called somebody else.
Right.
I mean, I know what you're talking about, and some of the
That's very true in the Methodist.
Yeah,
right.
Well, and then I'm also thinking one of the ministries our school's associated with. That, an AMB Zion church, that there's very much that hierarchy.
Yes.
That they're putting people in places and moving them, and it's...
Sure.
And I don't know if is that the case in the Presbyterian church with...
No. No. The local Presbyterian congregation calls. The only difference is that there is an entity that's making sure that what you don't have is a child pornographer or a adulterer or whatever moving from one church to another. They do have that. And that's only within the denomination. And by denomination, I don't mean Presbyterians. I mean PCA USA or what are the smaller entities. How about number four?
Oh, you want to hit number three?
Oh, yeah.
Constantly recast vision and values. Unrelenting transience means any preaching we've done on vision, values, or doctrine tends not to be remembered. We have a bank of sermons online, and we regularly refer new folks to past sermons that are important, even though it's not the same as walking through such topics with the church. We also recently reworked our membership class material to focus more heavily on our church's values and ethos. We found it's crucial to find ways to articulate and teach the culture of the church and not just hope that people catch on.
Yeah, I think this is something that we have to take a little bit more look at. I think we have to take a harder look at that second paragraph and figure out ways to do that. I know one of the things that I focus on every first class for at least 45 minutes is just God's plan of salvation, because I know that people are coming to us from such a giant variance on what they believe about how one gets saved. And so I do that. For sure. Looking at our covenant is another thing. But how do you got such a challenge, because you've got the people who have been sitting in the pews for all 10 years with you. They're on board. And then on any given Sunday, you have a third or even half of the congregation that hasn't heard this said before. This is the first time for them. And then you got John, who's been here every Sunday for all 13 years. And he knows he can finish the sentence.
I think the difference is Jonathan knows this need. And so when he hears it, it's a reminder, to us that have been around for a little bit longer, that there are people that have only been here for 6 weeks. Or that maybe they're newly saved. And I think it's helpful in the culture of our church that's the case. Because we're not so stuck on tradition or things being done the way they've always been done, that we're well aware that we have this rotating door of people constantly going out and coming in.
Number four,
call people to stay. While some churches rightly emphasize that God may call their members to go, we tend to emphasize that God may call people to the costly decision to stay. We encourage members to stay as long as they can, and even to take it a year at a time. It's essential, though, not to begrudge people who are leaving. It can feel like personal betrayal at times. That also makes it difficult to avoid moralizing choices to leave or stay. But as you call people to stay, remind everyone of their freedom in Christ.
That is a tough paragraph right there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know that for sure for me, that's probably it can feel personal, like personal betrayal at times. That's a really hard sentence. I remember the couple that just recently went out to Washington State.
Mm-hmm.
John, I didn't think they were ever leaving. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought I'd preach their funeral I just did not think that there was a chance in the world that they were going to leave.
Yep.
I had a young couple in my office that told me that they're going to Colorado, and they're not church members, so no one has to start thinking about who it was. And I said, "Man, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard you say." I mean, I just was. They have no church, no support mechanism whatsoever, struggling.
Mm-hmm.
I said, but the assumption is that the world's full of churches. That's the assumption. The world's full of churches. They've got the mountains. Oh, so you're going there for the mountains.
And that'll fix all your problems.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's essential, though, not to begrudge people who are leaving. It can feel personal, like personal betrayal at times. That also makes it difficult to avoid moralizing choices to stay or leave.
Mm-hmm. How does that work, though, in our community, more so with the military? Now, I understand there are the exceptions where people choose to make their moves. But even like the guys that are in the Army, obviously some of them can choose to pursue certain schools and stuff like that. But isn't most of the time our PCSs are outside of the individual's control? That it's just in order for them to stay in, they have to continue to follow the orders that are put in front of them?
It depends. It's a case-by-case basis. Every situation, like...
depends what branch you're in. Really.
Sure. There's lots of things. The family that's getting ready to go out to Sergeant Major's Academy. No, that's not optional. That he's got to go. There are other cases where an assignment comes down and you've only been on station for 3 years and you could probably defer it or you could probably trade. And I don't know if there's enough of a commitment to the local church.
Is it a fair assessment to say your career would stall for a little bit if you choose to pass on some of those?
No, not necessarily.
Mm-mm. No, I stayed here for 7 years, then went to Fort Polk for 3 and came back for 7. And my career was smoking on the first 7. And even for the second 7, it was just fine. I avoided Panama. I avoided Korea. I avoided another PCS to a local station. And because I didn't want to leave the church. I'd never been part of a church like this. We'd never spent a year at a church in my growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so I'd never spent 7 years at a church before. I never had so many friends and such connectivity, and I didn't want to leave.
I worked hard to get out of two reassignments when I was in Germany. One to Fort Irwin to be an OC and observer controller, and the other was a reassignment back to Fort Hood where I actually owned a home. But I was so ingrained into that church that I called branch. I looked for, hey, is there somebody else that could be sent to Hood? Is there somebody, you know, else that was wanting to go to Hood, but and there are orders for Germany, and I could take their spot and staying here, you know, kind of scenario. We can trade the assignments, and it worked out. I was able to stay 6 years there, but it didn't affect me for promotions or anything, so... I got promoted twice in that time.
Let's get Nate reading. Number 5.
In our city, we see clear examples of church jadedness toward transients. Some churches have responded by setting up extraordinarily high walls that make it difficult to connect or commit. Others don't bother with meaningful membership or commitment. They've given into a revolving door approach to ministry. Neither approach is healthy. Commit to love the people God entrusts to your care for as long as you have them. Throw yourself into it. Allow your heart to become tied up with them, even though you know they'll come to the pain of leaving. As Paul Miller said, every act of love is a means of being forgotten. The heart of love is a focus entirely on the other.
Who's Paul Miller? Should I have known who that was? David, where are you at? David would know. David knows everything.
I can remember the first time this happened to us, because when Lauren and I were first married, we met a couple. I'll use their name because they're great friends of ours. But Chad and Marla West, who were our age, no children.
Yep.
And we just clicked. And it was to the point we were over at their house. They were over at our house. And she ended up working for us in the academy alongside me and PE. So we were friends and got along great. And then when I found out that they were being sent to Fort Campbell, it was just like...
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, like seriously, like you guys are like the first Army friends I've had, and now right. You know, and even as a husband, even feeling more so for my wife that her friend was leaving. Is like, you know, I go to work every day, I have people I work with, you know, she didn't necessarily have all that, and it was just, you know, definitely feeling like, well, this is dumb. I'm not getting to know anyone,
yeah,
unless I know they're not in the military. But it can definitely be something that if you're not careful, that you can
become jaded.
Yeah, you just like, well, that's, you know, okay, yeah, I'll superficially care about you because it's my job or because you go to church with me, but to really get to connect. Whereas, you know, shortly thereafter, it was more of, no, I've got an opportunity to build relationships with these people and knowing that sometimes they do come back into our town, or that, you know, if nothing else, there's the fact of it's a reputation and a testimony that I now have that, oh, they only cared about us while they were there, and there was never a text, hey, how are things going in the new station?
So have you maintained it? Was there any ongoing connectivity?
It's drifted now. Our wives still kind of will communicate. I haven't talked to Chad since about a year ago when we were at their house. We tried to get with them over Christmas, and it just didn't work, but... there's still some, I wouldn't say we're close friends, but it was, you know, next time we're in the area, it would still be like, hey, let's try to get together and see them. But they've had other issues come up that's kind of affected their communication. So,
yeah, I would just encourage you that what my experience has been so far is that if you sustain any level of just a decent relationship through an occasional text message, an email a couple times, that when they show back up, you can almost pick up just where you left off. Because that's just kind of part of military life. You know, when David May showed back up, you know, it was just like basically we just picked up as though he hadn't been gone. You know, that kind of stuff. But it does require an extra effort. It certainly does. It requires an extra effort.
Well, and on the non-military side, just with the student ministry aspect, I've tried to make sure I'm very diligent about once I have seniors graduate in their first year of school, that there's at least a couple text messages, hey, how's the semester going, how are your classes, you know, what's going on, so that when they do, if they do show back up, that there is at least some level of relationship. And I've got students that have been back every semester break since then, and we just had a young man show up this past week that I haven't seen in years. But in his first year and a half of his engineering school, I was texting him frequently. And, I mean, gave me a huge hug when he saw me because there was that relationship.
Amen. Amen. You're doing a fine job, Nathan. Don't stop.
Oh, man. All right. Transient places.
Is that what that was?
Yeah, kind of.
A different one, man.
Yeah, you heard me wrong.
Yeah, obviously.
Transient places have a tendency to chew people up. Work life is intense. Relationships are difficult to foster. Many are in jobs that are fast-paced and full of travel. If you get caught in the grind, it will kill you in time. In D.C., few things are as countercultural as slowing down. We've had to learn the rhythms of our city and take opportunities to rest. In D.C., few things are as countercultural as slowing down. Holidays often mean a lot of our members travel, so we intentionally slow down midweek meetings, simplify our approach to Sunday services, and tell our church we are taking time to intentionally rest. We want to model sustainable rhythms as a whole church.
It sounds like he's watching Berean, because we very much do that. That when it gets to those times of the Christmas holiday, we taper back. We'll do a family integrated service. We'll forego a Sunday evening service or a midweek service, knowing that much of our community is out of town.
Yeah, and the one of the things that it does is it challenges your traditional notions of church and people's traditional notions of church.
Yep.
Like, especially in my area. I mean, Christmas, Easter, those big holidays are when you're supposed to pull out all the stops and do the big programs. And, you know, we have to, you know, and this is the other part of it, you have to endure answering the same questions over and over in a transient church. People come up, why don't we do this? And you have to make sure you don't have to make a face and go, oh, I've answered this question 100 times. Well, the reason we're not going to do a big program on Christmas is because nobody will be here because it's a transient town and they all go home, in quotes, for Christmas because nobody's home is actually here. And so it challenges people's notion of what a church is. And I think that the first time I came face-to-face with the idea that people have different visions of what church would be is when in like the same space of like 5 minutes, I had one church member come up to me and ask me why we don't use an organ in our worship. And then 5 minutes later, I had a church member come up and say, where's your bass guitar? And so that was like a watershed moment for me to realize, in our church, we're going to get people who, if you don't have a pipe organ in your church, you're not having church. And then you're going to get people in your church, if you don't have the world-class rock band that plays down at the festivals, you don't have a church. And we have to somehow navigate between all of those preconceived notions of what church is and say, well, wait a minute, that's not really worship or church at all. Yep. Here's what we believe worship in church is really about.
Did Brain ever have an organ, Steve? I thought we had a piano on one side, an organ on one side.
We did. When I came here, it was in disrepair, and it was going to cost more to fix it, and we didn't have anybody to play it, so we just...
But in the blue auditorium.
Yep. We had one on each side, right?
Yeah, it was in the big auditorium when I got here, too. It wasn't pipe organ, but it's electronic.
Right.
It's a mimic of a pipe organ.
Yes, okay.
Pipe organ's actually air going through pipes on the wall.
Those are legit. Right.
Those are legit, but those are like $150,000, so yeah.
Right. Glenda.
Seriously?
Oh, yeah, or more. The famous ones probably are like, some of them a million.
I watched a Mormon video the other day.
Yeah, like that one, a million.
And it was amazing.
Yep, it is. It is. It's pretty cool. When those walls rumble from that thing.
And that guy that playing it was obvious. He knew how to play that.
Well, he used the pedals. He had the feet and the hands.
He was doing all kinds of stuff. And he had things that he could pull out on the side of the wall.
But once again, that's a dying art. Nobody knows how to play those things.
Sure.
I think Mindy Woosley's the last person that played iron.
Or Callie.
Yeah.
Yeah. So do we replicate organ sounds with that keyboard?
We do, yeah. It's not quite the same, but it's the best we can do.
Right. How many churches would even have it anymore?
No. They,
just for older ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. There's a really great one downtown.
What church? First Baptist? Which
no,
one?
No, it's the one on Ann Street. What is that? Episcopal or something?
Pipe organ?
Pipe organ. It's weird, too, because the player faces the other way. And he's got a mirror. He has to, like, a rear-view mirror to see the choir because he's at the other end of the auditorium. It's kind of bizarre stuff. But
wow.
Tradition.
Wow. Did they? Is that because of where they had to put the pipes?
Yeah. Okay. It's a mechanical thing because it's really, truly mechanical.
Yeah.
Invest for the long term. Most of our partnerships were on a 3-year taper. This is a common approach for sending churches and donors when it comes to church plants, and I'm forever grateful to those who gave sacrificially to us and our church. Without them, we wouldn't be here. But at the same time, we were forced to accelerate some decisions and timelines because of that pressure. We've sought a different approach with the churches we've planted and invested in. Rather than set a specific time limit, we've intentionally devised plans for long-term partnerships, working with the planter to evaluate the church's plant needs on an annual basis. Such an approach will help to plant sustainable ministries in transient cities and other hard places. A good friend shared a stanza on Isaac Watts' hymn that is framed on my wall. It has helped me refocus as a pastor and a church planter in a transient city. And John, it's most appropriate that you would tell us what the stanza says. Maybe you can sing it.
Well, I don't know the tune to this one. It's kind of an off the beaten path, I think. The sure provisions of my God attend me all my days. Oh, may the house that my abode and all my works be praised. There would I find a settled rest while others go and come. No more a stranger nor a guest, but as a child at home.
And this is again Bill Rydell. He's the founding lead pastor of Redemption Hill Church in Washington, D.C. He was formerly trained at Trinity University, Trinity Evangelical Divinity School. Does that mean he's a Presbyterian? What do you think? Free church? Anybody have any idea what Redemption Hill Church is? But great points. Really appreciate him sharing us.
It's interesting because I thought we were the only one.
Yeah. I imagine Washington, D.C. would be chaos.
Yeah, I didn't ever think of that one.
Yeah, and I wonder what New York is like. Yeah. Maybe not as transient?
I wouldn't think so. A lot of the big, like that city.
Well, you think about, for example, House of Representatives and the turnover every 2 years. Yeah. Wow.
My son goes to Mark Dever's church, and he said it's a little bit annoying sometimes because you've got also a lot of like gawkers. They're more like sightseeing Christians who, this is Martin Dever's church. He wrote that book. Let's go visit there. And so, like, you know, the regular people, you know, they have to kind of endure this. People are making trips to D.C., and so they're going to worship there. And so,
yeah, that would be me. Man, if I got a chance, I'd be one of those gawkers.
Yeah.
Just endure me. Yeah. Thanks for listening. Have a great afternoon.